All right. Our first presenter, this is the beginning of our PhD oral competition. It's by Sumit Sharma, and be talking with us about carbon, water, and energy exchange. Sumit.
Thank you for the introduction. I'm Sumit Sharma. He introduced me. I'm a student, PhD student at Texas A&M University, and I will be presenting a part of my dissertation, which is on cotton. Besides that, I work with sorghum and grassland. Today, I will be talking about interannual carbon, water, energy exchange of irrigated and dryland cotton in the Texas High Plains. We all know where the cotton belt region is. But my area of interest is the Texas High Plains, which is one of the major cotton producing area in the Cotton Belt region. Prior to farming, this area was dominated with prairie. After discovery of Ogallala aquifer, this area was turned into active farming area. And the major crops, as you can see, those red pixels are representing cotton. Besides cotton, winter wheat, corn, and grain sorghum are the major crops in this area. Now, the Ogallala aquifer, the water extracted from Ogallala aquifer, 95% of it is used for irrigation. As a result of which, the water table in some parts has declined sharply, and we are looking at declining irrigated acreage in this area. There are some rules and regulations in place to regulate the water extraction from the area. And if this is happening from irrigated system to dryland system, it may have implication on carbon and energy balance in the region, which gives us a question about the nature and scale of carbon, water, and energy partitioning dynamics of dryland and irrigated cotton in the region. Which brings us to the objective of my research, which is to investigate the carbon, water, and energy flux associated with potential change from irrigated to dryland cotton in the southern cotton belt region of Texas High Plain using the eddy covariance method. So what is eddy covariance method? Well, before I go into eddy covariance method, we have, in order to find these fluxes and dynamics, we have two sites in Texas High Plain region, an irrigated cotton site in Hale County, Texas, and a dryland cotton site in Floyd County, Texas. The irrigated cotton site was irrigated through center pivot irrigation system. Both fields are big, at least 60 acres, 0 to 1% slope, Pullman clay loam. But what is eddy covariance system? As you can see in the previous, both sites have eddy covariance system, which is installed right in the middle of the fields. Eddy covariance system actually includes two main instruments, a sonic anemometer to measure wind velocity in X, Y, and Z, three dimensions, and air temperature, and infrared gas analyzer, which measures carbon dioxide and water vapor in the air. Using these two instruments, we measure carbon dioxide, water vapor, and sensible heat flux. We did it at 2 meters above the canopy height, and these are fast responding instruments. We took 10 measurements per second. The water vapor is actually latent heat of flux, which is the heat water takes when it evaporates from the system. Now, how does eddy covariance system works? Imagine the wind blowing over Earth's surface. The surface roughness breaks its laminar flow, creates eddies. We measure carbon dioxide and water molecule in these eddies. So at one time step, we measure carbon dioxide concentration in the air. We multiply it with the vertical component of the wind velocity, and we do it over time, and then we take an average of it. So since we are measuring carbon dioxide and water molecules in the eddy, hence the name eddy, and this equation resembles the covariance, that's where the covariance is coming from, and hence it's called eddy covariance system. We do it, a similar procedure is done to calculate water flux and sensible heat flux. In sensible heat flux, we measure temperature in the eddies. Now, before I go into further detail, this carbon dioxide flux we measure represent the net ecosystem exchange, which is the net carbon exchange between the canopy and the atmosphere. we can divide this net exchange into gross primary production, which is the gross photosynthesis, and respiration. I am not discussing this in my presentation, but I would love to talk about it later because it's going to take some time. Well, besides these fluxes, we are measuring air temperature and relative humidity, soil heat flux, net radiation, photosynthetically active radiation, solar irradiance, soil moisture, soil temperature, and rainfall. When you put everything together, this is how an adicovarian site looks like. And this is my grassland site. So when you are taking 10 measurements per second, you have large amount of data, and this is continuous data. So, and this is stored in binary format. We convert this binary files into ASCII files and feed this in a software called AdiPro, which computes half-hourly fluxes for us. Now, during maintenance or rainfall, the functioning of our instruments is impeded, it's interfered, and we lose some data. During these times, we have gaps, and we fill those gaps using a gap filling. We use meteorological data available at that time to fill those gaps. And the final product we get is half-hourly computed fluxes. In this plot, I show the latent and sensible heat flux. The black ones are latent heat, and sensible is white circles. And as per sign convention, when the system is losing something to the atmosphere, it's positive. When it is getting something from the atmosphere and accumulating in, say, carbon dioxide in the biomass, it's negative. We will see it later in my slides. Now, we also see the energy balance. The main source of energy in our system is radiation from the sun. The radiation that's coming down, is a part of it is reflected back, which is net radiation. Whatever is left is net radiation. That's available energy. This available energy has to be dissipated somewhere. So system loses this energy either in the form of latent heat, when water leaves the system taking the latent heat with it, evapotranspiration it's called, and or sensible heat through convection to the atmosphere, or it's lost through to soil in form of soil heat flux. There are other ways to lose energy as well, but they are negligible, so I neglected those. So the final equation of energy balance, the net radiation, should be compensated by sensible, latent, and soil heat flux, but it hardly happens. Usually for cropland, the closure ranges from 70 to 90%. And I also calculated Bowman ratio, which is the ratio of sensible to latent heat flux, just to know which one is dominating, because when system is losing energy, one of these is going to dominate, and we will see why. So coming on to results, when I'm comparing irrigated and dry land, it's important to see precipitation. 2014 precipitation was close to the long-term average of 460 millimeter. Dry land received about 4 inches more than irrigated in 2014. In 2015, the irrigation was appreciably higher than 2014, and than mean annual rainfall. Most of this precipitation was concentrated in months of April, May, or June. In 2015, it started earlier in April itself. But if you will notice, in July, like after first week of July and August, there was a lack of precipitation. And this is where I saw the irrigation was coming into play. So when you have adicovarience data, it's very important to check the quality. And one way to check the quality is through energy balance closure. On my y-axis is latent heat plus sensible heat. On my x-axis is net radiation subtracted soil heat flux. When you plot it, a slope of 1 gives you perfect energy balance closure. Like I said, it hardly happens. So it ranges from 70 to 90%. In both years, both sides, my energy balance closure ranged from 76 to 90%, which gave me confidence about my data that I can go further with this data. So now energy partitioning, like I said, energy partitioning, it will be in net radiation, which is represented by red dots, latent heat by blue, sensible heat by green, and soil heat by maroon. So as you can see, during non-growing season, nothing's growing. It was relatively dry period, and system was losing energy mainly in form of sensible heat. in both non-growing season of 14 and 15 in both crops. But when you look at growing season in 2014, where I picked July, August, and September, the actively growing periods, you see that in irrigated, both irrigated and dryland cotton during July, the system was losing energy in all three components neck to neck. But in August, the latent heat picked up in irrigated cotton, greater than dryland cotton down there, the bottom graph. And even in September, it was latent heat was higher in irrigated cotton as compared to dryland cotton. We saw the similar trends in 2015. However, this difference over here was a little less. Now, these are so this is the time in half an hour. Zero represent 12 o'clock in the midnight, and again 12 o'clock in the midnight. They say that during the daytime, evaporation, latent heat, or outside evapotranspiration is picking up. This is added component of transpiration. If plants are transpiring, they are also performing photosynthesis. And if cotton, irrigated cotton was transpiring more, we should see more carbon assimilation, which we actually did in August. So this is net ecosystem exchange, which is the net carbon uptake by the plants. In 2004, the black ones are irrigated cotton, the white ones are dryland cotton. In 2014, in July, even in 15, they go neck to neck together. In August, irrigated cotton picked up. Dryland cotton remained a little lower, even in September in 2014. However, in 2015, they were quite close to each other. So if it was irrigated cotton was accumulating more carbon in the active growing period. So why was it happening? Why system was losing more energy in latent heat at some times and sensible heat at some times? So we did Bowman ratio on x-axis and plotted it against soil moisture. It turns out when the soil moisture is higher, system is losing more water, more latent heat of evapotranspiration, vaporization. When there is no water, it's losing energy in form of sensible heat through convection. This is irrigated cotton. There is some disturbance in dryland cotton data. Needs more investigation, which I will. But once you see that, we go to the daily evapotranspiration. This is evapotranspiration in millimeters per day, and the x-axis is day of the year. As you can see, not much difference except here where the irrigation comes into play. The green ones are irrigated cotton. That's where it picks up. 2015, we don't see much difference. When you see the total seasonal evapotranspiration, in 2014, irrigated was greater than dryland, and it was close in 2015. The portion below this black line is when is the seasonal evapotranspiration. The higher over here is because of the early season rainfall in 2015. Similarly, the daily net ecosystem exchange, as you can see, the interesting thing over here is it irrigated cotton. Once the cotton was done, the farmer cut the stubbles and then plowed it, mixed it in 2014. It didn't do in dryland cotton. In 2015, this thing was also done in dryland cotton as well. So there was some management difference in dryland cotton between the years, which was seen in the data. So gross primary production was very close in dryland cotton both years, and there was more variation in irrigated cotton. The seasonal net ecosystem exchange, the net carbon that was accumulated during the season, was greater in dryland cotton as compared to irrigated cotton. And finally, the dryland cotton in 2014 actually acted as a sink of carbon, very weak sink, but in 2015 it was a source of carbon, maybe because it of the agronomic management over there. We also calculated ecosystem water use efficiency, dividing gross primary production with cumulative evapotranspiration. And it turns out irrigated cotton had greater water use efficiency compared to dryland cotton. And finally, with these results, what will happen if irrigated is replaced by dryland? There might be significant effect in the regional weather due to energy dynamics. If irrigated cotton is replaced by dryland cotton, may reduce the latent heat and reduce the amount of water that's released to the atmosphere. If irrigated is all replaced by dryland, the amount of carbon released is reduced based on these results, but it can vary from sink to source depending upon the agronomic management. So with this, I would like to thank my committee members and the farmers I worked with and my student workers and funding agencies. Thank you.